I knew I was different, but at the same time, I never thought there was anything wrong with me. I thought there was something wrong with the rest of the world. Yeah. The only thing that I knew about being autistic was the guy in that movie, Rain Man.
Once I found that you were neurodivergent, it was like, 80% of our relationship is fine. It was just the 20% in which we bumped heads. It was like hell.
Well, if you do the research, you'll find that daughter gets her brain from her dad and a son gets his brain from his mom.
You know, when you first heard that, you know, AJ was on the spectrum, when he was first diagnosed as a mother, like what, you know, what emotions kind of went through you?
That's multi-layered when you think about being autistic, Black, and a woman. Without the knowledge, there's always questions. And if there's always questions, there's never clarity. Yeah. And that causes confusion.
You are the neurodivergent investor. We'll pay our mortgage.
Yeah.
And then you'll be like, oh, I made it back the next day.
Yeah.
Like, that's not normal.
Wait, I know you want to watch this next video, but listen, if you are an entrepreneur, business coach, business consultant, or a small business owner who has a story and wants to learn how to create multiple streams of income from your story, I need you to text me right now, my book, to 646-687-4152. That is my personal number. I have been an author for over 12 years. I've written 10 books. Four of them have been bestsellers, and I've sold over 100,000 books, but I've also helped a lot of my clients take their expertise and put it into a story, then create multiple streams of income from that. So I want to help you do the same thing. So text my book to 646-687-4152. All right, let's go back to the video. Welcome to another awesome episode of Inside the Vault with Ash Cash, the greatest money mindset show on the planet. Listen, today's episode is a very, very, very special episode. I'm sitting across from not only one of the most brilliant women I know, but also my wife, my partner, someone whose courage is transforming how we see neurodiversity in our families and our communities. Amina Phelps is a strategic business consultant, tax expert, and wealth educator with over 20 years of experience helping entrepreneurs and professionals optimize their financial strategies. But beyond the spreadsheets and success stories, there's another story, a personal one, that she shares in her powerful new book, Hidden in Plain Sight, A Journey of Autism, Motherhood, and Self-Discovery. In this deeply personal work, Amina reveals what it's like to discover her own neurodivergence later in life, how our son's diagnosis opened a doorway to self-understanding, and why this conversation about autism, especially in Black families, must evolve. We're talking about love, we're talking about marriage, parenting, purpose, and the courage to embrace the parts of ourselves that society too often misunderstands. So lean in, because this conversation is going to open up your eyes and your hearts. Ladies and gentlemen, round of applause for my queen,
Amina Phelps. What's up, Miss Amina?
Hey. Hey, what's going on?
What's up, Miss Amina? So I appreciate you.
Yeah.
For, you know, doing this episode, right?
Yeah.
Because this is, you know, you're not really the camera person.
Yeah.
And so I had to.
I'm becoming.
Yeah, you're becoming. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that because we.
Yeah.
But I thought this was a very, very important conversation to have because of, you know, our discovery of just neurodivergence, right? Meaning, you know, in our son, in you, in me, actually, right? Because even through your journey, I realized that I have ADHD, adult ADHD. I don't know. I just say adult ADHD, but it's ADHD.
Yeah.
And understanding neurodivergence, I'm able to noticing in other people now and things of that nature. So it's so it's a great conversation, you know, to have, especially as it relates. And I want to specifically talk about autism because I think that, you know, for a long time, autism has had a negative connotation, specifically in our community. So I want to have that conversation. But before we just start, like, for those who don't know, who is Amina Phelps?
Wow, I am, man, I answer this question in so many different ways in my head, but just to keep it simple, I am a mother, a wife.
Why are you a mother first? Weren't you a wife first?
I was a wife first. That's true. Yeah. That's true. But as most women, we have to retrain our thought process on, you know, once you step into that motherhood space,
for sure.
That level of responsibility, that just automatically comes first. Yeah. And I don't think that's something that men would ever understand, because they'll never be able to carry children. Mm-hmm. But as I was saying, wife, mother, daughter, child of God, absolutely got to add that in there. And, you know, just like everybody else, entrepreneur, content creator, like these days you have to be all the things, you know, even if you do have, you know, the ability to delegate some of those things. So I'm a multifaceted woman on a journey.
Let's start from the beginning, right? Let's talk about that moment that inspires you to write Hidden from Plain Sight.
Wow. So that story is very interesting. I'm gonna go back a little bit further. And I don't know if you have this in your questions list about when I actually discovered that I was on the spectrum, which came with my son's diagnosis. Taking him to the doctor for his 2-year-old appointment. And then, you know, just kind of thinking that he was deaf. You know, I don't know if you remember, we thought that he possibly couldn't hear because he was 2 years old, still babbling. And then when we would call his name, he wouldn't, you know, answer to it. Mm-hmm. So me thinking, me learning childhood development with my first daughter, I knew that he should know a lot of words. I'm like, he probably just can't speak because he can't hear us.
Yeah.
You go to the doctor. If you read the book, you'll get the story. The doctor tells us, get him evaluated immediately. So that was when I first realized, after going on a journey to research what he would be going through as an autistic child, that I was possibly on the spectrum. It took me 7 years from that moment to really lean into that. And that was in part due to an interview. I'm going to shout Miss Amanda Seals out. An interview that she did with Shannon Sharp. So that was about 2 years ago. She did this interview with Shannon Sharp. She made the announcement that she self-diagnosed that she was autistic. She got a lot of flack for that. And I guess that's another conversation, because I have some thoughts around that. But as I watched her, as I watched how she engaged in that interview, I saw a very specific trait that I knew was completely connected to being autistic. And I said, oh my God, I do that with you. I was like, I do that with you. And I pointed it out. I'm like, yo, you see how she kept going back throughout the interview? There was one point that she felt like he did not completely understand. And he would ask her questions about something totally different, but she would tie it right back so that she could see if he gleaned that understanding.
Yep.
And I do that with you a lot. And I said, oh my God, that's what encouraged me to write that book. I said, you know what? It's time for me to reflect and think about and reanalyze myself in this position.
What was the, you know, when you first heard that, you know, AJ was on the spectrum, when he was first diagnosed as a mother, like what, you know, what emotions kind of went through you?
Man, you know? It was, and I write about this in the book, it was a roller coaster.
Yeah.
Because at first, having no knowledge of what autism actually was, I automatically thought the most extreme. And to be honest, he was diagnosed moderate to severe. So I'm thinking, oh my God, this is going to be a completely different experience from my experience with my first child.
Yeah.
Right. So I had the shock first, and then my autistic brain goes into rabbit hole mode, you know, research. I researched everything. I watched videos. I was just like, I needed to know everything so that I could prepare myself for this experience. And there was a part of me that felt, I broke down. I cried. I remember I was on the train. On my way to work, watching YouTube videos, and I saw a video of a little girl whose parents had the same experience, and they just documented when she was two and how she regressed, right? That's what they call it, regression. I'm doing that in air quotes because as you learn more about the autistic brain, you realize it's not really a regression, right? But I saw how, because they did this documentation because they felt like it was connected to the vaccines. So they showed how she got this vaccine and then she automatically became exactly what I was seeing in my son. And that's what made me break down. I'm like, oh my God, that's when it became real. It became real at that moment on the train going to work.
What are some misconceptions though that people have about autism?
So let me say a disclaimer.
Okay. Let's not say what people had. Let's say, what were the misconceptions that you had?
Okay, I like that. I like that better. So some misconceptions that I had was that he would be nonverbal. I thought all autistic people didn't speak. To be honest, I really didn't have misconceptions because it wasn't part of my world, right? I heard about it. The only thing that I could relate to was Rain Man. That's the only thing at the time. The only thing that I knew about being autistic was the guy in that movie Rain Man. So misconception one, that he was going to be a genius, and two, that he was just going to be awkward, like severely awkward to the point where he would need help.
He is a genius though.
Severely awkward, that he would need help for the rest of his life. Like he wouldn't live a regular childhood. It's probably one of those misconceptions.
And then so, you know, so now he's diagnosed, you realize he's diagnosed, you know, in the book, right? So you described realizing that many of your own childhood experiences mirrored AJ's. What was it like to consider that you too might be on the spectrum? Like what did that feel like to be like, oh man.
Wow, which moment, right? Because there were two moments of realization. So it was that first moment with his diagnosis, and after doing research, I think as a mother, I was so concerned about him that I pushed me to the side. And I don't know if you remember, I told you and my mother in that moment. I said, I think I might be on the spectrum. But I guess I said it in a joking kind of way. And even though I knew what I was reading was an exact reflection of what I went through as a kid, it didn't matter because I needed to take care of him. So I just put myself completely to the side. But what was your question? Because I want to answer that for the second moment.
So what was, you know, what was it like, you know, to consider that you two might be on the spectrum?
In the beginning, it was disappointment. A lot of sadness, anger, right? Because I felt like, how did this go unnoticed? You know, and this is just an emotional reaction because again,
and anger that it went unnoticed by your family.
Anger that it went unnoticed by my family because I felt like, man, I just wish I would have knew earlier. Or it just, it kind of explained a lot of things that I may have questioned. And a lot of things that I could have gotten support for.
No, I get that. And then, how did self-diagnosis and later clinical confirmation change your self-perception as a woman, as a wife, as a mother?
That's a good question. It changed my self-perception in all areas, for sure. As a wife, as a mother, as a Black woman. again, it was a moment of clarity. The moment of clarity that I needed to actually live without weight on my shoulders, because that's how my entire life felt up until the moment that I got clinically diagnosed.
Can you talk about that? Like when you say your entire life felt like you had weight on your shoulders.
Yeah, it felt like I had weight on my shoulders because while I am very confident and I have a lot of pride, I never looked at myself I knew I was different, but at the same time, I never thought there was anything wrong with me.
Got it.
I thought there was something wrong with the rest of the world.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm like, what is wrong with these people? It turned into, because I couldn't get the answers, I turned into an angry person. Mm. I'll be 100% honest that a lot of anger and resentment that I had around life, even though I have always had a very good life,
yeah,
was attributed to me knowing that I was different, but fighting within myself to say, no, I'm not different. They're different.
Yeah.
That was an internal battle for years. I think it really started. It started at the age of about 11 or 12. Mm. From 11 or 12 up until 2 years ago, that was the battle that I fought.
Wow.
On a daily basis. So 11 to 12,
up until your 40s, a daily battle.
Daily battle.
Wow.
Because I knew I couldn't accept, my level of confidence wouldn't allow me to accept that I was different. I don't know if this makes sense. It wouldn't allow me to accept that I was different even though I knew I was different.
Yeah. Wow.
But there was still this thing in my head, like, well, what's wrong? What is it? And it's like, well, nothing's wrong.
Right.
And I know it sounds crazy, but I'm like, nah, something got to be wrong. But I'm like, nah, it's them. It's like when you see the majority of people, I'm going to use the word conforming to life as they do.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you always have that question. Maybe something is wrong.
Yeah. Would you say that was the or what was the hardest part?
Yeah.
Of accepting, like, hey, I'm neurodivergent.
Nothing was hard about accepting it.
Was it freeing?
It was very freeing.
Okay.
Accepting it, and I think this is I have a group on school, and we talk about things like this. And I know most people's experience. It was challenging for them to accept that.
Yeah.
It wasn't challenging for me at all because it gave me relief.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it makes sense. And I was like, I liken it to someone who can't see that finally puts on glasses.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, shit. This ain't supposed to look blurry. Yeah, this is clear.
Yeah. How would you I'll just talk like. Mm-hmm. I know for me, finding out that you were neurodivergent was freeing for me in so many different ways because I would say that I am like just the nature of how I grew up, right? So was always in trouble, was always trying to get away with stuff. Mm-hmm. And so in order for me to navigate life, I had to learn people. And so very good at reading people, learning people, understanding people, things of that nature. And then when I transitioned from always being in trouble and going into like banking and sales and all that stuff, I had to also learn people, whatever. In the midst of that, you know, as somebody who was very sexually active before we met, you know, I mean, broke my virginity really early, 11 years old, really was studying girls or whatever the case may be, I kind of felt like I know everything about women that I need to know, right? I was like, you could quiz me on any type of woman, and I could read them like the back of my hand. And because I never studied a neurodivergent woman,
right?
And so there were things that I would argue you down, like, yo, I know this is.
Yeah.
And these patterns wouldn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
And I would literally fight and be like, God, this don't make no sense.
Yeah. Like, I remember those fights.
Right? Like,
I don't make no sense. Listen, stop thinking you know me.
Right. Like, I've studied that if this, then that. Yeah. Right. Almost like a math problem.
Yeah.
And I would say that once I found that you were neurodivergent, it was like, ah.
Yeah.
And then I started replaying a lot of the times that we've bumped heads or, you know, we've had issues.
Yeah.
I replay it and I realize that that's the reason that I was reading it all wrong.
Yeah.
How would you say that, you know, knowing that you're neurodivergent, how has that helped in or how has that evolved our relationship?
You know, my neurodivergent autistic brain wants to say I was right all along.
Okay.
I was right all along because it was true. And I like that particular aspect of it. We had a lot of differences because you had an expectation of either how I was going to respond, how I was supposed to respond, or even to the point of telling me, no, that's not what you mean, right? And I'm like, why does he think this way? I don't understand. I'm telling you, this is what I mean. This is what I'm saying. But you're like, nah, you don't mean that. There's no way. But it's helped because I understand me more.
Yeah.
Right. I think without the knowledge, there's always questions. And if there's always questions, there's never clarity.
Yeah.
And that causes confusion.
Yeah.
For our relationship, because of that clarity, it has made it more, we can communicate easier.
Agreed.
And honestly, that's really it.
Yeah.
Because everything else has always been fine, right? It's just those moments of unclarity that caused conflomeration in the communication.
Yeah. No, I agree. Mm-hmm. So what advice would you give to partners of neurodivergent adults who want to love support without trying to fix? Because I think that's part of it, right? It's like when someone is, when you see something wrong or something wrong or something you perceive wrong with your partner, the goal is to fix. Let me try to fix this thing. Let me work through. And I'll just say that, like, for me, that's what the relief was, right? Because I mean, to be honest, 80% of our relationship is fine, right? It was the it was just the 20% in which we bumped heads. It was like hell, though. You know what I'm saying? So the 80% was fine, but the 20% of the time when we did bump heads, it was like, oh my God, this is like the worst thing ever. You know what I'm saying? But I think understanding it's neurodivergent, you know, and that's the other piece of it is like, well, I know that she could change, is what I'm thinking, right?
Yeah.
Because I've seen the parts of you that I wanted to see, right? And so I'm like, I know she could change. So we gonna fix, right? But then understanding how your brain work, I'm like, oh, there's nothing to fix,
right?
And there's a better understanding. So what advice would you have to, for partners of neurodivergent adults?
Yeah, I think understanding that what you may have been seeing that you thought could be fixed was masking, right? And that's something.
What is masking?
Masking is when, let's say in the most layman of terms, is like when you do what you need to do to fit in.
Got it.
Right?
Okay.
And that's multi-layered when you think about being autistic, Black, and a woman, right? Because there's so many different masks that we have to wear without the neurodivergence, right? So a lot of those things that you may have seen that you like, oh, okay, that can be fixed, was me masking just to keep things status quo, but it was never really who I was. But then you get to the point of burnout where you're like, I can't do this no more.
Right.
I just have to be who I am, and that's it.
Right.
And someone that's in a relationship with someone, if you guys are aware of the neurodivergence, because that's the first step, you have to have the awareness of it.
Yeah.
If you don't have the awareness of it, you're going to always look at it as a problem. Right?
Yeah.
So the advice that I would give is if you have the awareness, study, research, learn, get to know the patterns, get to know the different nuances, get to understand sensory issues and the issues that come with different lighting, and you know, it's so many components of it. And there's no one size fits all to this. That's why they call it a spectrum.
Yeah.
If you've met one autistic person, you have not met them all, because we're all different.
Yeah.
But there are some things that, you know, we are challenged with, right? Yeah. Like you may be dating someone who isn't necessarily social, and they get overwhelmed by being in social environments, right?
Yeah.
Neurodivergent people are more direct. We're more transactional, to be honest. We don't engage in small talk easily.
Yeah.
It's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But yeah, just learning those nuances, and then just, you know, having a greater understanding and working around it. Now, it's not to say that just because this person is, or what would be considered rigid in that way, based on a neurodivergence, just be able to accommodate, because they'll meet you halfway.
Yeah.
I think, I can't speak for everybody.
Yeah.
But I think if you're in a relationship and you notice that those challenges related to who you are as far as your makeup is, there has to be an understanding on both parts. It's like, well, okay, if we do this, I know you have a threshold.
Yeah.
When I see you at that threshold, I'm gonna make sure I accommodate you, and you may mask a little bit. Masking is probably one of those things that you need to do in order to say, okay, I'll accommodate you here, but it's but for so long, know?
I my follow up question to this though is also, how do, so there might be a couple watching right now that none of them know that their partner is neurodivergent.
Right.
And they're just watching for whatever. They might have a child that's autistic, and they read the title and they're like, right? But 9 times out of 10, if your child's autistic, there's a parent that's autistic.
Yeah. Research has shown that it is absolutely genetic.
Yeah.
If you do the research, you'll find that daughter gets her brain from her dad, and a son gets his brain from his mom.
So not Tylenol.
Not Tylenol.
So Tylenol is not causing autism.
No.
Okay.
Tylenol is not the cause of autism.
Yeah.
But it's genetic. You'll also find it if you keep going back, and once you learn and you start seeing other members of your family have the same characteristics, and you'll see the links.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, my son just so happens to be on the spectrum. It proves the theory that the son gets the brain from the mom.
Yeah.
The daughter gets the brain from the dad. As I learn more and I talk to my mom, she says, yes, your dad showed those same characteristics. I get my brain from him. Therefore, that's the pattern, the genetic pattern, right?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. And so like, right? So now parent, somebody's watching, adult is watching, and they don't know that.
Yep.
That they're on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
What are the things that they should be asking themselves, or how do they start to identify whether they're on the spectrum or not?
That's a tough one. And we talk about this all the time. I'm conflicted there. Because I feel like for those of us who are late diagnosed, we usually discover it because of something personal that has happened, right? It's usually because a child's diagnosis, and you learn more and you're like, oh shit, this sound like me. What are some of the other ways that people, late diagnosed people, usually find out?
I mean, I know, because like I found out I'm ADHD, but it was
because of us.
Same thing,
Right. Same thing is, well, with AJ, you weren't really thinking about it.
No.
But when you start diving into it, when I decided to acknowledge my, you know, accept my diagnosis, you are looking through things and you kind of discovered your own.
Yeah.
If you don't have those two elements, it's kind of tough. It's tough. Of course, you can look at social media content and just do research and see the similarities, but it doesn't always mean that you're neurodivergent.
What are some of the, like, so what are some of the signs, or what are some of the symptoms, if you will, right? So like, for instance, right, I have somebody that I work with, very close, who, when you know, we started talking about neurodivergence and autism and spectrum and things of that nature, light bulb went on for him. He was like, oh man, every girl I've ever dated said that I'm distant.
That I don't
show emotion.
But it takes doing the research, but something has to trigger you to want to do that research. So if you're listening to this interview and a lot of these things sound familiar, then you're going to naturally just go on that journey if it resonates.
What are the things, I guess, right? So what is it like, you know, distant, like give me some characteristics of somebody who is an adult and they are potentially on the spectrum.
I would say some of the classic ones are like the one you mentioned, right? Lack of emotion and empathy, right? If you're getting that from your mates, I don't want to say you're likely on the spectrum, but that's a common one. If you are not, if you're not inclined to be in social settings, that's usually a big one as well. If you find that you're drained, like if you do go to a social setting, you're drained and you probably won't go back out again for the next 3 months. That's usually because it's the sensory overload, the overwhelmness. There's tons of them. There's tons of them. But you really have to, it's a journey.
And so for couples raising neurodivergent children together, what have you learned about teamwork, patience, and grace?
That's a good one. I feel like I learned the most by realizing that my daughter's also neurodiverse as well. And it's taught me a lot of patience and grace, because me thinking that she's quote unquote normal or neurotypical in this case, I had expectations that I didn't realize that she just couldn't meet, right? So we both agree that we believe Taylor's ADHD. And I had to, that she got from you, right? I had to. As I learned more about ADHD because of you, it helped me to understand her more. I don't want to say we were in conflict, because my daughter is
a genius.
Dare I say perfect. She's 17.
Just like me, because she got it from me.
Right. She's 17 years old.
Yeah.
She gives me no issues. But, you know, typical teenager, there's some things that, again, like I said, I have expectations. And I get upset when she doesn't meet that expectation. And I'm looking like, yo, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
But as I learned more, I start seeing about ADHD, I start seeing patterns and traits that made me say, oh, okay, I need to push back, because her brain just doesn't process in the same way that, and again, me knowing my diagnosis also allowed me to have grace, because I realized, oh, you're thinking this way, that everybody else is, something is wrong with you.
Right.
It's really not the rest of the world. You have to be conscious of that, you know?
And so, I mean, I'll speak to that though too, because even I know for me, I've learned patience, grace through my son, right, through AJ, and I think God is funny in that way, because I think that God gave me my son to teach, because I always say that AJ came here to teach me how to love.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Because my daughter came to soften me up, because I was an angry.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team. and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips, like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Man, I was a YN, right? Mm-hmm. I was an angry guy. And then by the time 2008, my daughter comes here, she makes me soft, right? She softens me up a little bit. So now I'm not as ready to pop off over every little thing. But then I still had those little reminiscences of these things. And then when I look at, you know, when I look at my son, it's like, he taught me how to love, right? Unconditional. You know what I'm saying? Because I knew how to love, but there was conditions. Like, you gotta be this way. But he taught me how to love unconditionally. And then in turn, though, I passed on that grace to you because now it's like, man, y'all have the same brain. So some of the things that would piss me off about you, because I didn't think, you know what I mean? Again, I didn't think that you, I was thinking you could fix these things.
Yeah.
Right? It gave me that patience. It gave me that level of grace, if you will, because it allowed me to realize, like, again, the brain just processes, you know, things a little differently. How can neurodivergence actually strengthen relationships when both partners are willing to understand each other deeply?
How can it strengthen the relationship? Let me think about that. It can strengthen the relationship because there's just a new level of understanding. That's an interesting question. Because I feel like it can kind of go both ways. Finding out about a neurodivergent aspect of a partner could also create distance because you could feel like, well, this is something that I can't change. It can't change. Right. Like, so it's like, what's the point? This is just me being, you know, thinking through the question you just asked. But again, with the understanding allows, if you allow it to, it can. Can definitely strengthen.
Let's talk a little bit about the Black community and awareness now, because I think this is one of the reasons why I wanted to really have this conversation, because I think that you know, we are, in the most things, especially in the Western world, we're given the short end of the stick. You know, I know that, you know, in white men, most, you know, they were given, or white boys, they were given most of the research and most of the leeway as it relates to neurodivergence, especially in the Black community. And we talked about this offline that, you know, I know for me, I was ADHD. They tried to put me in special ed. Right? You know, ASD boys, special ed. Like, they, you know, and so let's talk a little bit about that, right? So in your book, Hidden in Plain Sight, you know, your introduction calls out the invisibility of Black women and girls in autism research. Why do you think many Black families miss the sign or are misdiagnosed entirely?
Well, and women in general, Black or white, there's only, if I'm not mistaken, 7 to 10 years of research of autism just in women in general. So when you break it down to the Black community, you know, they're not even looking our way as it relates to specifically Black women, because they've already attributed stereotypes to a lot of the personality traits that an autistic woman might have, right? Standoffish, angry Black woman, in some cases, antisocial. And if you have ADHD, you might be considered loud, mm-hmm. or, you know, all of that. It's the stereotyping and the racism that would definitely diminish the idea of, because they're going to lead with that.
Yeah.
They're going to lead with it. And then us not having the resources, us looking at it as a stigma, it's easy to go unnoticed, mm-hmm. unrecognized, not even thought about. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, what cultural or systemic barriers have you seen that mm-hmm. keep, you know, Black families from getting the support and diagnosis they need?
I feel like the cultural barriers are more prevalent than the systemic, right? And I guess I can't speak for, so coming from New York and coming to Georgia, there are some systemic issues. They don't have a lot of the resources that was available for even my son. When we found out that he was diagnosed, like, there was tons of support. But when I got here, I realized that that support isn't available. And I think that's a systemic issue. Mm-hmm. But as it relates to culturally, we already have so many stigmas. We don't want to add.
Right.
We don't want to add another. Just a parent wouldn't want to get an IEP for their child.
Yeah.
Because they don't want it following them along, and they don't want them thinking that they're incapable of doing anything. And yeah. you miss out on opportunities if you don't acknowledge what you're struggling with. You can't get the help if you don't acknowledge. But culturally, we're like, no, I don't want my son to be labeled as... I'm thinking of the wrong word to say. I can't think of the right word to say.
Right.
Mentally challenged, or, you know.
Yeah, but I think it's a valid point though, because I think, you know, full transparency, I was like that.
Yeah.
Right. So when we found out that our son was on the spectrum, I never acknowledged it, and I never wanted to acknowledge it. Yeah. Like, I never wanted to, like, don't. Go to no meetings saying that. Like, I used to cringe when we would go to different schools. You'd be like, hey, by the way, let me tell you. I'm like, oh, don't do that. You know what I'm saying?
I think it's, I'm glad you said that, because I was the complete opposite of you. I'm like, no, awareness is key.
Yeah.
Awareness is key, because if I don't make you aware, you're going to think it's something that is not.
Yeah.
And then you're going to treat him in a way that he should not be treated.
Yeah.
But if you have the awareness and you have the understanding and the knowledge of the disorder, you're going to handle it. At least you should.
Yeah.
And that's where the advocacy comes in, because if you don't, then somebody needs to stand in and say, wait a minute.
Yeah. And I just thought the opposite. Like, I just kind of felt like there's a time where you could tell somebody, you know? Mm-hmm. And I felt like as a child, you want to empower them as much as possible. You never want to make them feel like they're different. Mm-hmm. I don't want him in a special class. I want him in the class with everybody else. I want him to, you know, he's probably more intellectually smarter than, some of his peers. So I don't even want him thinking that, you know, that there's something wrong. Mm-hmm. And so that was sort of like my thinking.
And I feel like that's something that we also need to change, because using the word wrong, there's nothing wrong.
Yeah.
It's just different.
For sure.
It's just different. It's nothing wrong. Because children that are, whether you're ASD, whether you have dyslexia, there's a ton of different things that fall under the umbrella of being neurodivergent. Mm-hmm. It does not mean that there is something wrong with you.
Yeah.
It means that you take a different approach. You think differently, and that is
how do we start to change that language, though?
I think it's happening now. There's a lot of awareness.
Yeah.
You see a lot of African American creators, both male and female. And I feel like if we talk about it more openly, that dynamic begins to change, because it impacts all areas of our life, not just our relationships, but our careers, our work life, you know, and that awareness has to be there, because it's designed for the neurotypical world, the neurotypical person. All of the rules and all of the spaces, education is designed for that.
Yeah.
And the masses, right? You have to literally, when it comes to education, you got to put your kid in a Montessori school, you have to homeschool, you have to do micro school in order for them to be addressed. Mm-hmm. But if there's awareness, there may be an opportunity to do that in the public school.
Yeah.
So you don't have to take them out, right?
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. How can like churches, mosques, schools, mm-hmm. community organizations become safe spaces for neurodivergent families?
Hmm. I don't know.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I never thought about the religious aspect and how they might think about neurodiversity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never thought about that.
Okay.
Why did you ask that?
I mean, because I feel like, you know, when we think about in the community, like in the Black community specifically,
mm-hmm.
You know, these are the places we go, right? So mm-hmm. so we go to the mosque, we go to the church, we go to the schools, mm-hmm. we go to the community-based organizations because mm-hmm. we know systemically there are things that are against us, and these are the places that mm-hmm. are supposed to be safe spaces.
Mm-hmm.
But if those places are, conforming to the world, if you will, and, mm-hmm. and approaching things in a way that's only neurotypical,
mm-hmm.
right, that now it becomes a double, double whammy, right? A double ostracization, ostracized, because you feel like I'm going to this place so I could feel like I belong.
Mm-hmm.
But because my mind is a little different,
mm-hmm.
I may not be, accepted, if you will,
mm-hmm.
you know?
You know, I think that, and I don't know, because like I said, I don't know, but I don't think that would be an issue, right? Going into religious places wouldn't necessarily ostracize. Mm-hmm. I think that depending on how the environment is conducted is more ostracizing than the people not embracing them.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you think about, I grew up in a Baptist church, mm-hmm. right? We would be more ostracized by the constant give me a hug, talk to your neighbor,
right.
loud music before we're ostracized by the people because it's overwhelming. It's like, oh my God, I can't take this.
Right. But no, but that's a good example though, right? Because
yeah.
like it now becomes not a safe space for you.
Yeah.
Right? Because now yeah. as a neurodivergent person, if the pastor keeps saying, look to your neighbor, right? Eye contact is a big thing
yeah.
for neurodivergent
yeah.
people.
Yeah.
Hug your neighbor, touching, sensory
yeah.
is the bad, thing.
Yeah.
I know for me, I grew up in a Protestant church.
Mm-hmm.
I know for me, I had ADHD,
yeah.
so I can't sit down for long.
Yeah.
I'm getting up, I'm fidgeting, I wanna go to the bathroom, I wanna do this, like I'm, right?
Yeah.
And they, you know what I mean? I got in trouble for that, you know
yeah.
what I'm saying? And so, you know, again, these places don't mm-hmm. become safe spaces, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm being told I'm different. I go to a community-based organization and I'm being yelled at. I'm being told to sit down. Like,
yeah.
So it's like these places, right, without
mm-hmm.
the awareness, which is probably why,
mm-hmm.
again, why I want to do the show, but the
yeah.
awareness is really important because mm-hmm. you could be diagnosing people. Like,
mm-hmm.
all of you teachers that used to yell at me, y'all yelled at me for the wrong reason,
mm-hmm.
right? Y'all didn't know how my brain works. So
yeah.
so y'all need to cater to, right? And there's tons of kids
mm-hmm.
that are in special ed, that are mm-hmm. in juvenile detention centers even.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because neurotypical people did not understand how their brains work.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And so there has to be a way or, awareness
mm-hmm.
of how to make it a safe space
mm-hmm.
so that way, neurodivergent people could feel seen at least,
That's a big ask for the Black church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I do believe that's a big ask for the Black church to say, listen, quiet down the choir.
Because
that's a major component.
Right.
I'm just taking it back. You brought in education and I agree with all those aspects.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
when you think about religion, that's an interesting perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So far in your journey,
mm-hmm.
You've encountered a lot of people, whether it's people in your life, whether it's people online, who through your advocacy and,
mm-hmm.
and what you put out there have like, maybe my child is on
yeah.
the spectrum.
Yeah.
What message do you want to send to Black mothers who may suspect, right,
mm-hmm.
that their child is on a spectrum,
mm-hmm.
But they're afraid of the stigma?
Get an evaluation first mm-hmm. and foremost,
yeah.
if that makes you feel comfortable. A lot of people say, evaluation is not necessary, but if your child is young go ahead, get the evaluation, seek out the resources. It is so important to have the awareness. I can't stress that more than anything, because it's really going to help. It's going to help you be able to be a better parent, but it's also going to help your child understand who they are. Speaking from the perspective of a child that didn't know.
Yeah.
I really wish that I had known in a safe, empowering way, right? Yeah. I do understand now that it probably was a good idea that I did not know in the late 80s, early 90s, right? Because it would have debilitated me in a lot of ways, right? Back then it was all about, oh, you can get a check.
Right? Facts, yeah.
Which is going to cap. SSI check. Exactly. Facts, yeah. Now, that diminishes my ambition because it's like, well, if you do too much, you can't get your check. And blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So I'm glad. And, you know, tons of other things. That was just one example. But if you have a child that you suspect is on the autism spectrum, may have ADHD, whatever it may be, get them the help. It's going to help them more than it will hurt them. Yeah. I guarantee you.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about purpose, advocacy, and wealth for a second. You're not just a mom and author. You're a business strategist, master trader, right? How has being neurodivergent influenced your approach to business and wealth building?
Oh, man. The approach has changed drastically.
Yeah.
I have stepped outside of that neurotypical box, I'm going to call it, and I'm really leaning into doing things my way, and it's been the best thing ever, you know. Understanding my brain helps me to understand how to make different choices, how to be not afraid, but how to be encouraged to explore things that I may not have explored before, like trading being one of them. Understanding that my brain is designed to recognize patterns, and when this is introduced to me, it's been introduced to me for years, but in my mind I've already told myself, oh, I can't do that, that's for, you know. But as I learned how my brain worked, I'm like, oh no, this is a perfect fit. Like, this makes the most sense because I do this in my everyday life. So you put me in front of some charts and give me some information to research, I can make really good decisions making money and building wealth. So, but even as in my career, right? And ironically, this was happening before I had the official awareness. The unmasking helped me to elevate in my own career. It wasn't until I unmasked, which was literally at the same time my son got diagnosed. I remember it. I was consulting actually, because I had to work from home. And me allowing myself to be direct, say what I saw, utilize those skills in my career helped me get promoted, get paid more, right? It was respected. So it helped tremendously.
You are the neurodivergent investor. What inspired that? How does it connect the worlds of mindset, money, and neurodiversity?
What inspired
neurodivergent investor?
Neurodivergent investor. There's a couple of inspirations there. Of course, starting with you. You know, talking to an acquaintance of yours, exploring different people. I stumbled across Wall Street Trapper, and he speaks my language. So I was able to get a great foundation from what he taught, right? And then I just allowed it to expand from there, you know, coupled with ironically at the same time, leaning into this autistic diagnosis, again, learning the brain and seeing how it just matches up with what's required in order to be a successful trader.
And like, you've been like killing it though, right? Like,
I'm still pretty new, but I've been doing pretty good.
So what's pretty good? Because like, I think your brain is downplaying.
Yeah.
I think your brain is downplaying it, right? So like, just to kind of like give context to the people, like, I don't know, if you put your money in a bank, you'll make what, 4%?
4%, right.
When you're averaging what?
I'm averaging
30%.
And that I was going to say a little higher than that. Okay. That's on the low end.
Okay.
I'm averaging about 60 to 80% returns.
So 60 to 80%, you think that's all right? Like that's all right?
Yeah, it's all right.
Okay.
It's all right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. The next question, to me, yeah. You know, again, and I, even that, right, is a show of like how brain is different because I don't know. It's like if you don't, and maybe you know, even as you build your community, though, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, and I don't know how you do it, but it's like you have to be able to see the value in what you do,
yeah.
Right? And not necessarily look at it as an everyday thing, because if you do, then the ability or the urgency in even teaching other people might not necessarily be there.
Yeah.
Right? Because for me, just doing the math in my head, that means at 60 to 80% means that if I have $1,000 and I invested that $1,000, I would get back the $1,000 plus $600 to $800.
Yeah.
Like that is not normal, right? Because most people would get $600 to $800 with $1,000 in 30 years. Right? So to be able to do that in a day.
Yeah.
And literally like just snatch money out the air.
Yeah.
Is something that's important or something to give credit to. Because also, you know, again, there's other people out there that's a like,
yeah,
literally, you know, we'll pay our mortgage,
yeah,
and then you'll be like, oh, I made it back the next day,
yeah.
Like that's not normal,
yeah. And I mean, of course, I realized that because I was never able to do it before, so
right.
It blows my mind. But
right.
I think that, of course, the downplaying of it comes in that ASD brain again.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, well, I haven't really mastered it. So there's still so much more for me to learn. So I'm not going to play this up. I haven't, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean.
So for professionals or entrepreneurs who are neurodivergent, what structures or strategies help them thrive in business? What would you say?
What structures and strategies help them thrive in business?
Yeah.
Man.
Or what structures and strategies help you thrive in business?
Organization.
Yeah.
Having flexibility. Great communication. I feel like it's all things that would help anybody, whether they're neurodivergent or not. But I think that the communication piece is probably the biggest thing, right? Yeah, you have to learn how to communicate with someone who's neurodivergent.
Yeah.
And that's a spectrum, right? Like I had to learn how to communicate with you. You had to learn how to communicate with me, accept my directness, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What you know, now that you know, that you're neurodivergent, you have children that are neurodivergent, from a wealth perspective, do you think that gives them a disadvantage or an advantage? And even yourself from a wealth building perspective.
Well, I think it definitely gives them an advantage.
Yeah.
A huge advantage, because you're going to always see things different. It's like being given the gift of vision.
Yeah.
Right? Depending on where your gift is. If your gift is creativity, if your gift is intellect, you're going to have a huge advantage because you see things that, or process things in a way that the average person is just not going to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so if you could go back and talk to your younger self, right? Mm-hmm. That quiet, high achieving girl who didn't yet have the language for what she was feeling. Mm-hmm. What would you tell her?
The one thing that I would tell her immediately is that you know exactly who you are. You know exactly who you are. Everything that you are thinking is the absolute truth about you.
Yeah.
Don't question it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't question it, because I do realize now that I understand my brain is that the only reason why I questioned it because everybody else was different.
Yeah. And you know, I want to kind of go back a little bit to the advantages or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Like, let's just say, you know, in our son, like we look and like we believe that he'll, you know, he'll be a billionaire
for sure,
right? Mm-hmm. And part of that is, again, how his brain works. Like, he has his he has a memory like a computer. Mm-hmm. He's able to run things really quickly. Mm-hmm. When you think about his demeanor as a, you know, what most people call a shrewd business person, mm-hmm. he has that already at 10 years old.
Yeah, he had it before 10.
Yeah, right. He had it before mm-hmm. before 10 years old. Mm-hmm. You know what do you believe? Because even my speculation, when I look at all of the leaders of the world, mm-hmm. I think 99% of them, like, I don't, mm-hmm. you know, I think majority of them were neurodivergent.
Yeah.
Do you believe neurodivergent people run the world?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Warren Buffett, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos. Mm. Who's the Microsoft guy? How could I forget
Bill Gates?
Bill Gates. Mm-hmm. Watch them. Mm-hmm. Don't take my word. Go back and watch them. Get the characteristics. You're going to see they carry each and every one of them. Watch documentaries on all of them.
Yeah.
The advantage that they had, I do believe a lot of their extraordinary success was contingent on the fact that they were white males, right? They did the research on them. Their parents were aware and they knew, and they provided that those different spaces in the same way that we're doing for our son, right? That's the only advantage that they had.
Yeah.
Like you said, our children were thrown into, you got special ed in one way or the other. You was either special ed or gifted and talented. That's as far as it went.
Yeah,
we see that y'all are different.
Yeah.
You bad and different. You're quiet and different.
That's what distinguishes
one or the other. They recognized their differences as children and they gave them resources, right? They accommodated it. And that, I think that's the biggest argument when you think about advocates of autism, the only thing that we are asking for is the accommodation. Mm. You don't really have to change anything. You keep things exactly the way they are.
Yeah.
But just accommodate that so that that brain can thrive. It helps the person and the business.
Yeah. 1,000%.
Yeah.
What do you think is the advantage? Like I feel like, and I don't know, I think we attracted each other because of the neurodivergence, because I feel like as an ADHD person, the reason why I fell in love with you was because you were different.
Yeah.
Right. You had these characteristics that I never really saw, you know, in a woman who looked like you, to be honest with you. Right. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, someone who probably was, you know, let's say maybe on the spectrum, maybe didn't look away. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So you was an autistic baddie. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Like you look normal, for lack of better words. But when I think about all of my strengths, but also all of my weaknesses, you know, what your strengths are balances that out.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Which if we use, that's the one thing I wish I knew about you being on the spectrum earlier, because a lot of the communication barriers that we had probably wouldn't exist.
Yeah.
And there's a lot I think we would have gotten done. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, for sure.
You know, because we've gotten a lot done, right? So like, we live a great life. Like, so it's not like we didn't get a lot of stuff done, but I think that the fact that we know now, right? There's a now understanding, and we're able to get stuff done, you know, sort of easier or whatever the case may be. You know, but again, I think that like my strengths and what makes me, you know, my superpower, if you will, of having ADHD and then your ASD, that combination is like powerful. But there are nuances, right? There are some things that I require, let's say, as an ADHD person, and stuff that you require as an ASD person. How do you balance your needs versus my needs?
We're still trying to figure that out. That's the honest answer.
Yeah.
'Cause this is still really new for both of us.
Yeah.
Right? Would you agree? It's still relatively new. Yeah. Again, understanding.
Yeah.
That's the key word for the day, for the interview, is understanding. I have to understand. And I can't get upset or have these expectations that are unrealistic for your brain, not for you. It's not even about you anymore.
Right.
It's not about me anymore.
Right.
Right. It's just about the way that we process it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
And if there's some understanding there.
Yeah.
On both sides, right? Because it can't go one way. You can't have all the understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go on my merry way, be like, oh, you get it. You understand. You just accept what it is.
Right.
I have to have it's awareness and understanding.
Yeah.
I have to have the awareness. I know who I am. I'm learning who I am. I'm studying who I am. Okay. That is not going to fare well in this relationship dynamic. Yeah. What can I do even when I feel it? It's self-regulation. You have to do a lot of self-regulation.
Yeah.
And then there also has to be understanding for when the need can't be met immediately.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to just happen like that overnight. Or even years later, your brain is still going to process something that you might say, for example, snap at.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you're not going to be able to stop it.
Yeah.
Sometimes you will be able to self-regulate and say, wait, hold on. I feel it's coming up. Let me take a step back.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's awareness, self-regulation, and understanding. Those three things are really key.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. I love that. Look, y'all, make sure y'all go get the book, Hidden in Plain Sight.
Mm-hmm.
The deep dive about her story, about, you know, there's some tips in there. You know, whether you know you're neurodivergent or you support somebody who's neurodivergent, or you're in a partnership with someone that's neurodivergent, or you love somebody who's neurodivergent, make sure you get the book, Hidden in Plain Sight. Is there any question that you wanted me to ask and I didn't ask, or anything that you want to leave our insiders?
No, I don't think there's any questions that I wanted you to ask. I do want to mention my school community.
Yes.
I have a community of fellow late diagnosed neurodivergent individuals that are absolutely awesome. We talk about things like this. I have a lot of good resources. I focus mostly on how to thrive in the workplace. We will be touching on parenting and relationships as well, but because I was a 16-year HR professional, I wanted to start there. So if you're having struggles in the workplace, as a neurodivergent person, definitely check our community out. There's a masterclass, there's lots of resources, and you know, we have lots of conversations around best ways to handle building relationships, getting those allies, getting mentors, and letting people know how it's best to work with you so that you can thrive.
And if somebody wanted to go and join that community, where would they go?
Oh, it's Unmasked and Unbothered on the school community. So you can just look up Unmasked and Unbothered.
All right, y'all, we are closing out the vault. And if they wanted to connect with you, where can they find you?
Unmasked and Unbothered on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube.
All right, y'all, closing out the vault. Another awesome episode of Inside the Vault with Ash Cash, the greatest money mindset show on the planet. Again, make sure y'all, I'll put the links in the description as well. Make sure y'all go get that book. I will be coming out with a book shortly on ADHD. I do think it's important because there's a lot of, I gotta say the title yet because I don't want nobody to steal it. Mm-hmm. It's a dope title because there's it's a great title. But so make sure y'all get the book, links in the bio. Make sure you join the Abundance Community, right? Go to theabundancecommunity.com. Follow us on all social media platforms at Inside the Vault. Visit our website, InsideTheVaultShow.com. Me, I am Ash Cash. Make sure you visit me, IamAshCash.com. Follow me on all social media platforms at I am Ash Cash. I will see y'all next time, same place, in God's will. Peace.